Good afternoon, brethren. Well, I couldn't have asked for a better hymn or announcements for what I'm about to speak to you about today. I have a question for you. You may have heard it before. Why are you here? How many of you have heard that question before? I thought a few of you had. I mean, I got a little different take on it, though. I mean, how did you come to be here? Here. Right now in this seat. On this seat. You may have some answers. You may say to yourself, well, I come here every week. Or you may say, I come here because my friends are here. I come here because the beach is too cold. That's why I come here. Or some of you who are younger may say, I come here because that's where mommy or daddy drove me and I have to go. I come here maybe because the seats are soft. The food afterwards, when it's served, you may come because it's good food. And of course, one of the most important things you come here for, it may be for the coffee. But let me tell you, I'm sure you've got friends elsewhere. Go find them. If you want food, go to Denny's. If you really want to go to the beach and it's too cold, put on a sweater and go to the beach, if that's what you want to do. And of course, if you want coffee, this is Southern California. And there's Starbucks or some coffee shop on every corner. That's what you can do instead of coming here. So I'll ask you again, why do you come here to this building at this time? Well, you may say that the messages, they're spiritual. Well, other churches have spiritually oriented messages. They're in bigger buildings. Those buildings are nicer. There's more people. You go there. And possibly, maybe, the speakers are better. Especially right about now. Well, I'd like to attend on the Sabbath. Go to a synagogue. They meet on Saturday. They meet on the Sabbath. There must be an answer, something that you want here, in this place, on this day, and at this time. Something inside you draws you. Something deep inside you maybe has a question. People are constantly looking for something, aren't they? I noticed on the search engines that there's a couple of new search engines on the internet. There are now, I think, 50 different search engines for different people, and they can get us anywhere. They can find us anything. If you're searching, they can find it somewhere, somehow. But what are people searching for? Now, because you are here in this building at this time, you may indeed have been searching, but for what? If you want to be with your friends, and if you want good food, and you want to be entertained, and your folks will take you, you know where you can go? You can go to Disneyland. It's not real, but you can go to Disneyland. Well, wait a minute, the talking mouse, that's real. But if you want all those things, you can go to Disneyland, can't you? All those things will be met. But today what I'd like to talk to you about, that what we do here and why you and I are here, is more than the food, it's more than the fellowship, it's more than the coffee, it's more than the soft seats that we sit on every week. That's not what we seek. What brings us here to this place and this time, we're going to discuss together, and what is here is indeed more than just soft seats. Now I'm going to try and get this technology to work real quickly. And I'd like you to watch a movie. It'll prepare you for next Saturday.
We're all looking for it. Some of us have been looking our whole lives. Some think they can buy it. Some think they can wear it. Some travel the world in search of it. Most don't even know what they're looking for. But we all feel it. That aching desire. That unexplainable emptiness. That can only be filled by one thing. The truth. Scientology. Know yourself. Know life.
I want to wondered how you react to that. It was pretty compelling, and you weren't laughing until it came to the end. How many of you have seen this on TV? A few of you have. You're going to see it broadcast millions of times. It is a major, major media effort by that organization. But it does bring up a few points that are very, very important. Some people do spend their whole life searching for this thing, the truth. The video is playing all over the internet and is playing on many of the cable networks. The profound issues that it raises are important for us. I was reading recently in the second and third epistles of John. Frank and I talked, and I think our messages may mesh a little bit, especially even with the Bible study. But as people spend their whole life trying to buy it or wear it or have it around them some way and searching to the very ends of the earth for it, they often think that they do so because it is an endless search for something that is gnawing deep inside of them. It's especially true of young people. I used to be young once. I remember. It's this aching that we have inside of us, especially when our minds are new. They're not so cluttered as they are when we get older. And we have things that are fresh, and we look at things differently. Our children, our young adults, our young people will be affected by what they see on videos like this. Because they, just like everyone else, is searching for the truth. And only the truth can fill that aching desire. The video is correct. At least 90% of it is. If the truth is something that can only fill this aching longing. But there is something called the truth, and there is something called a truth. And only the truth will fill that hole, that void. The Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, I'm going to get a little esoteric with you, said something very interesting. Truth is one of the central subjects in philosophy. It is also one of the largest. Truth has been a topic of discussion in its own right for thousands of years. Moreover, a huge variety of issues in philosophy relate to truth, either by relying on theses, you know, the ideas or the concepts or premises of truth, or implying them about the truth. It goes on in saying in the article, truth has developed over the years, and in the early 20th century, they developed what's called the correspondence theory. I like the math or the idea of correspondence. This appealed. It says the basic idea of the correspondence theory as it relates to truth is that what we believe or say is true if it corresponds to the way things actually are. In other words, if there's something that it relates to that is factual. In fact, they came up with the slogan early in the 20th century. Philosophers developed the slogan, quote, a belief is true if and only if it corresponds to a fact. A fact. So we are looking for a truth that contains itself or confines itself or is tied to a fact, a quantifiable set of data. But it's not just any truth that man seeks. As it says in the video, and I don't want to promote or rely too much on the video, there is a difference between any truth and the truth. The truth. It must be, therefore, the set of facts that produce the truth, a truth that is above all other truths. But you're here. You're here. And so we must make some assumptions. I don't want to get into the philosophical relevance of truth. We'd be here all day, and I don't think I'm qualified to speak on it. So I'll make these assumptions of those of you that are here. They're large assumptions. By your presence here, we must presume and assume that you believe the Bible is true and factual in its simplest form. You believe, therefore, that there was an Adam and Eve, just as we heard in the first message. Indeed, there was an Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There was a flood. There was Israel. And there is a God in heaven that you heard about as well. You believe all that. And who sent his Son, Jesus Christ, who was sacrificed in our stead for our sins. You believe all that. But the vast majority of churches, Protestant and Catholic churches, they believe that too. But why here? Why now? Why on this day? Turn with me, if you would, if you never thought I'd get to the Bible, turn with me to 2 Second John, I mean, Frank, Mr. Fish and I were, I think, thinking along the same lines. We gave each other a very cursory idea of what we were speaking on. And he was going into First John, and I think I knew where he was going. I thought that was really interesting. But I'm going to spend time in only the books of Second and Third John. They're some of the shortest verses in books, as a set of books in all the Bible. 27 verses between John, Second John, and Third John. They're very simple. They use very, very few words. The Greek that it uses, when you learn Greek, they always have you read John first. The Gospel of John, and then 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, because it is very simple, very clear or clean language. The structure is very simple. But the words, as few as they are and as simple as they are very, very profound. The epistles, in fact, of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John or what we would call in-house epistles. They're letters to people that are already in the knowledge. It's in church. It's church talk, as it were. It's internal to those people. It's not meant to go to the outside world. It's not meant, in fact, to go to fairly new converts. It's meant to talk to those people who are deep in the knowledge. It's written possibly late in the first century, probably just before John wrote the book of Revelation. It's hard to speculate. But he also deals with some heretical issues. We're not going to deal with those. That's not our purpose here. I mean, they were very, very severe. And they were within the church. But what we want to talk about today and to discuss is the answer of why we are here today, on this day, on this time, every week. The letters were written specifically to two people. A lady, which many think might be a church, just a code word, and another person named Gaius. In fact, these letters, many believe that they were written in code should these letters fall into the hands of the opposition. So they're sent in very simple structure, but the words have great meaning, but only to those who would know. And so we're going to get to it, I promise. So I want you to think about these key words, and we're going to begin in verse 1 of 2 John. It says, "The elder to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all those who have known the truth because of the truth, which abides in us and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace be with you from God the Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love. I rejoice greatly that I have found some of your children walking in truth, as we have received commandment from the Father. And now I plead with you, lady, not as though I wrote a new commandment to you, but that which we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. This is love, which that we walk according to his commandments. This is the commandment, that as you have heard from the beginning, you should walk in it." Very simple. Those are the first six verses we're going to concentrate on. I want you to think about the words that you heard and how many times they are repeated. He uses just a few words and he repeats them. He repeats them in a definite order, in a definite relationship one to another. John knew exactly what he was doing. In fact, we're going to delve into it a little bit as I think it relates to the video and why we are here. Let's begin. What's the first word that you notice that appears five times? The word truth. Truth. He uses the word both with and without an article. He talks about the lady and her children whom I love in truth. In truth. He then says later, but all those who have known the truth, and because of the truth which abides in us and will be with us forever. So that word is repeated. It is the truth, and he uses it always in a positive way, as we'll see. Paul, when he uses the word truth, and he does use the word a lot, uses it many times of those who have moved away from the truth. They no longer speak the truth. They are no longer in truth. So it does have, unfortunately, often a not-so-positive connotation. But John is always using it to those, mainly, who have the truth. His letters are short and sweet here. He talks about the truth relative to those who have it and how it affects us. The second word is the word love. It's there four times in just six verses. The word love four times. Third is the word commandment, also four times. And last but not least is the word walk, which is used three times. All the words are used the same, or they're cognates in every instance. In other words, truth means truth, love means love, commandment means commandment, and walk means walk. All of these form a connective link with each other. They're used over and over again. If any of you remember math, it's called the commutative principle, where they're related one to another over and over again. Let's look at them and analyze what he's saying here. Number one, first he says, we must know the truth. Not any truth, not a truth, know the truth, or it is known to us. Truth must be sought after. Truth must be gained. It's something that we do not have. It's something that is apart from us. Unfortunately, often we must know a falsehood before we know a truth. Isn't that true? When you know something false, it becomes true. If you tell me that you have a 1985 Yugo automobile, and you say, you know, that is the greatest car that was ever built. The greatest car that was ever built. And then I say to you, or someone asks you, well, how many cars have you had in the last 20 years? Oh, I've just had the one. Just had the Yugo. It's all I've ever had. I've never ridden in another car. I've only had this one car. You would have no idea of anything else, would you? You'd be Yugo-brained. That's all you would know. You would have nothing to relate it to. And so we see in many cases, does that mean we have to drive every car to experience which is the best car? No, we do not. But we have to have some reference point, unfortunately. You never know how good something is until you know how bad or wrong something else is. Must we inhabit untruth to experience the truth? Not always. Must we say to ourselves we cannot understand what the Sabbath is about unless we've kept Sunday for 20, 30, or 40 years? No, of course not. There are people who have a great depth of knowledge, understanding, and appreciation for the Sabbath, the Saturday Sabbath, and have never, ever kept Sunday. But they know what Sunday is. It is a false holy day. We know it is a false holy day because we know what the true one is. We know it is the day Jesus kept. It is a day that we preach as truth, as an important part of the commandments and the law. It's part of the instructions Mr. Fish brought out earlier. But until we have proved and understood what we believe, then it cannot be the truth. If you haven't proved something to yourself, how can it be true? Well, somebody told me, and I trust them. That's not the truth. That's a belief. But that may not be the truth. This is where God's Spirit comes to play here. When we say we know the truth that John is talking about, it gives us discernment. It gives us deep understanding. It separates something that's just a truth, an understanding, a belief, a fact, to what is called the truth. And that is one of the reasons you're here today. It's a desire also to know the truth. You have to have a desire to know it, to understand it, why it is what it is. Let me ask you another question. Do you love the truth? Nobody that I've ever met loves a falsehood and knows it's a lie. I love knowing lies. I just seek out people who lie. I want them around me. I want them near me. In fact, I love being in their company. I love to be lied to. No one loves that. No person in their right mind. And so the question is, do you love the truth? Many of us can recall the time when we did come into the church. I think that's one of the most exciting things that we can talk about, is how we came into the church. I'm not going to bore you with mine. Let me go ahead. No, I'm not. But all of us personally can remember what those first steps were and the excitement, yeah, and the sincerity of our quest. And whether we did it through, you know, media, or we did it through the printed word, or we may have done it from a friend or neighbor or a parent, a loved one, a spouse. God uses all those things. He's not bound by any one thing. But we have this love of the truth and to understand more and more and more. We understand more about the truth. We understand more about what God is trying to get across to us. We had a very interesting discussion last Sabbath after church, and we talked about that. I don't think it's that old. I think it's a discussion topic that's really in the last 5 or 10 years. Of first-generation Christians in the church, second-generation Christians in the church. How many of you are first generations? In other words, you were the first in your family to come into the church. How many of you are second generation? Many, many more hands. The church is now, as it should, historically, chronologically, and logically, moving away from a predominance of first generation and to second generation. And that's important. That means more people are coming into the truth from a family member, from a mother or a father. And that's important. Those of us that are first generation know that our experience with the truth and the love of the truth is much greater, don't we? No, we don't. It's not that we've experienced any more, we've experienced any better, but indeed, it is important that we all come to the truth differently. We have this love of the truth. I've thought of it this way, between almost like Jews and Gentiles in the first century. The Jews are somewhat like our children, our relatives. They've kept the Sabbath most of their life. They clean and unclean is an everyday thing to them. They realize that. They don't need to be told what the truth is. They really know it and understand it. They've lived it for decades. Think of a 21, 24-year-old young person in the church. They've kept the Sabbath for over 2 decades. They know what it is. There is no debate in their head which day is the Sabbath. So they're like the Jews. They know all this. But what they don't obviously understand is the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. So they come into this wonderful knowledge and this depth of knowledge that they didn't have before. Those of us that are first generation are kind of like the Gentiles. We're like the Gentiles in that we were doing things that were wrong. We didn't know it was wrong until we were told it was wrong. And we experienced the truth. It is such a departure. It is such a change from being a Gentile to a believer. It's just an analogy. But it's important that we have this longing for the truth, this love that we have. And it's important, next, after we love it, he says to walk in the truth. Notice that he says in the very last part of the verse, verse 4, he says, I rejoice greatly that I have found some of your children walking in the truth. In fact, he ends verse 6. He says, this is the commandment that as you have heard from the beginning, that you should walk in it. When you walk in the truth, it's something that you have, right? That you abide in it, but you also walk in it. It forms a normal pattern of behavior for you. It's a part of your life. In fact, the word walking there means how you conduct your life. You walk in the truth, conduct your life according to the things that you know. It also says to abide in the truth. When you abide in the truth, as he says in verse 2, because of the truth which abides in us and will be with us forever, we now abide in the truth. It dwells in you. It makes a place in you. It is a part of you. This is that thing that's in the video that people are searching for. If you found it, you walk in it, it's inside you. This knowledge that you have of your destiny, of your life, bought by another, guided by God's Spirit, is in you. And that should give us great peace. The world doesn't have that peace. It's still searching. It's still wondering. We should have that peace. We are not on a burning quest for the truth. We have found the truth. It abides in us. We walk in it. We love it. Indeed, number 4, there is the love in truth. It begins the whole verse. He says, to the elect lady and her children whom I love in the truth. Now, what does that mean? Most people love because they are loved. We reciprocate love, don't we? This is a very interesting part that John brings through in this very short 6 verses. Because there was pressure from the outside in and from the inside out of heretical beliefs, non-believers that would constantly attack the church, John repeatedly, and I invite you to read the rest of his epistles, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, on a Sabbath, he constantly talks about loving in truth. Notice what he says. In fact, it occupies the majority of these six verses. Verse 4, he says, I rejoice greatly that I have found some of your children walking in truth, as we have received commandment from the Father. Now, what commandment from the Father? Those are the laws of God, the commandments. And now I plead with you, lady, not as though I wrote a new commandment to you, but that which we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. Now that's famous Gospel of John, right? I give you another commandment, that you love one another. He says that we love one another, that this is love, that we walk according to his commandments. This is the commandment, that as you have heard from the beginning, you should walk in it. The love that we have for one another among the coffee and the cookies and the fellowship that we have, this great love that we have that draws us together, where we call each other friends, is because we share the truth. We share the truth. I have friends at work, friends from school, friends as neighbors, but I don't share the truth with them. They're different. I like them, and I fellowship with them, but I don't love them in the truth. That's what John says to do among each other, especially when hard times hit. He says this over and over again throughout his epistle. So we see in John's letter this great sense of the law of God, both in the commandments from God the Father and as explained and expanded under Christ's ministry. Both tense senses of the commandments are given here. We see this overall. Now I want you to turn to John 3. Turn to John 3. Again, a very short letter. We're only going to read just a few verses here. He says, again, the elder. You'll notice the pattern that John uses over and over again. The elder, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. For I rejoice greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such, that we may become fellow workers for the truth. It is the truth that binds us together. It's the truth that we abide in, we seek for, and we act toward each other in love of this great truth. That is the thing that holds us together, the knowledge that God the Father has sent his Son. And that was one of the major controversies, one of the major heresies that John had to fight against, was that Christ had not come. Another heresy was that they did not need their sins removed. And number three, relates to the video, that man innately to himself knows and has the knowledge. The truth exists inside already. The three great heresies. This is what John fought against. I want you to sometime read these verses in 3 John 1 through 6. Note the themes of walking and caring for the truth, one another, God's people, all of it. The truth of God is all of its present. Here someone is exemplifying this truth. He is a walking, talking example of all these factors of God's very precious truth. A truth that the world does not know and does not understand. A lot of times it's not even seeking for it. It thinks it is, but it isn't. Now, I want you to, when you read this the next time, I want you to remove it. Remove the word Gaius, and I'd like you to put your name. The elder to the beloved Harry, Sally, Richard, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that you, Harry, Sally, whomever, may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers. For I rejoice greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you. This is what drives us to this place for this time and in these seats. You know, we do have soft seats here. We do have some good friends. We very often have great fellowship, good food, but we have something far, far more here. We have the truth.